Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is Way Back Playback, episode number 365, as this week we bring you the conclusion of WCW Super Brawl 2. Hello, you people. I am Pat McNeil, joined as always by the other half of the podcasting tag team champions of time and space, the effing king of recovery, Jim Valley. Jim, are you ready to hop into the Wayback Machine and return to 1992, knowing that we've been coming to the same party for 7 years now, and in no way is that depressing?
I'm ready for a super time at Super Brawl with my super tag team.
All right, that's the spirit. Yes, we'll be talking more about that future probably after we do the watch along here. In the meantime, our show moved up the Apple Wrestling podcast charts in Canada by 75 spots over the past week, so yay on that. Also, Chartable has moved us up to and has us as one of the top 300 leisure podcasts in the world, Jim. And it's my hope that one day Wayback Playback will catch up to the big boys like Backyard Bounty and Homebrewing DIY on that list.
Hey, if we're catching up with people who brew beer, that's pretty good.
That's true. And Chartable also says we're back in the top 4,000 podcasts in the USA. I don't know if that's the top 4,000 overall or the top 4,000 that are registered on Chartable, but it's a big accomplishment anyway. Oh, and also we have a Patreon, patreon.com/waybackplayback, where you can get all the episodes, and we'll tell you more about that during the commercial break. Patreon.com/waybackplayback. In the meantime, let's get to the part where we cover the way the wrestling media reviewed this fine show. Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer wrote about Super Brawl. While it was a virtual consensus that this was a good show, somehow expectations were so high that it didn't quite live up to the card of the year mark. Still, there was a legitimate match of the year contender on the show, and most of the matches were good. He gave Dusan Lager and Brian Pillman 4¾ stars. Tom Zink and Van Hammer against Kevin Nash and Ricky Morton gets a negative half star. And the show overall gets a 90% thumbs up for Wrestling Observer readers, which is pretty good.
Yeah, if Tom Zink would have been in the match a lot longer than Van Hammer, that probably would have helped that match. I mean, given they gave so much time to Van Hammer instead of Tom Zink and Ricky Morton, I think that's kind of what caused that to be a problem. It wouldn't have been a complete disaster.
Right. Okay, so meanwhile, over on the PW Torch, Wade Keller gives the show 7 out of 10. Gives Liger and Pillman 4½ stars, and gives Zink and Hammer against Nash and Morton 2 stars. He says this show proves WCW has a ton of talent with more coming in, but it did not click tonight. Other columnist reviews, Chris Savisa gives it 7 out of 10, saying the wrestling was consistently good with Liger versus Pillman being excellent. Everybody seemed to work hard, but it just wasn't what we had hoped for. Bruce Mitchell gives it 8.0, saying the change to 8 longer matches improved the show immensely. Jesse and Ross were good, but they should improve as they work more together. Eric Kroll gave it an 8.0, saying the show was great live. There was no worst match. Mark Madden gives it a 6, saying it was good, but WCW needed to have a great show that would get people talking positively about WCW, and it didn't happen. So that's kind of this show in a nutshell here, the way it was reviewed and talked about. And I think we're ready to get back and wrap this up with the two big final matches. And by the way, everybody, happy All Out Sunday. Jim, happy All Out Sunday to you.
Yeah, you know, 2 years ago, I was at the first All Out in Chicago.
Yes. And Chris Jericho. Jim, hold on.
Can you not hear me?
Your mic is cutting out. It was during that whole portion we were talking.
There we go.
Okay, is that better?
That should help, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot better. All right. Okay, so let's continue from there. All right, so two big matches to go. We're at 1 hour, 58 minutes and 31 seconds. And yes, All Out weekend is All Out is this Sunday. And hopefully in 15 years, we'll be reviewing that show here on Way Back Playback. And by the way, this is our 7th anniversary show. And I would like to congratulate us, Jim, on going 7 years without ever once doing a video podcast.
That's amazing. 7 years is quite an accomplishment. And You know, I just sit here and talk. I give you all the credit, Pat.
No, you don't.
Success. This is.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work the same without you, Jim, and everybody knows that.
You're the one driving the ship, my friend.
Okay, well, blame me for that. Okay, no, but I'm still, you know, we've gone 7 years without ever doing the video version of this podcast, and you people, you're welcome. That's all I have to say about that. And a happy Sunday night or Monday morning, depending on when you're hearing this. This is just a reminder that Jim Valley and I have our own Patreon, and you can find it at patreon.com/waybackplayback, our official patron for the show. And our tiers start at the low, low price of $4.50. $4.50 a month gets you access to all 364 episodes of Wayback Playback, both the ones here on the podcast feed and the ones we did behind the paywall over at PW Torch. Thanks to Wade Keller and PW Torch for participating in our Patreon and providing access to our files. Also, our patrons also get each new episode in advance and ad-free. Now, if you are a member of our Black Scorpion tier, the higher tier, that's where you'll get all of our bonus material, including bonus matches that we have done and bonus episodes that we are creating for you, and also in case we have to go on vacation or on assignment. In fact, Jim and I have just completed another watch-along bonus for our Black Scorpion tier. This is for the February 6, 1982 episode of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, featuring, among other things, Ric Flair against Jay Youngblood, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. taking on Private Jim Nelson, and Roddy Piper looks for a tag team partner for the upcoming World Tag Team Tournament. That's a lot of fun. We just want you to join us here on Wayback Playback. And if you want ad-free shows, you want our new episodes before they're released to the podcasting public, and you want access to our entire archive, 7 years worth of Wayback Playback shows, that's all there, patreon.com/waybackplayback. And as always, we thank you for your support. All right, so 1 hour, 58 minutes, 31 seconds, long shot of the ring. You're there, Jim. I'm there. And I think you people will be there, and we're all going to hit play together in 3, 2, 1. All right. Again, beautiful, you know, great shot of the arena. Looks great for wrestling. I don't even know if it exists anymore, but there we go.
Yeah, no, it exists. That's where Punk made his second appearance, I think. No, it still exists.
Okay.
AEW is just there.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Anyway. All right.
Different name, but it still exists.
Okay, yeah, different name. Okay. All right, so Eric Bischoff is explaining how Ricky Steamboat has the psychological advantage in this match, which sounds suspicious, but okay, we'll go with it. And we're all agreed that Paulie Dangerously is barred from ringside, so there will be no shenanigans, no monkey business.
Of course not. That's what that always
means. Yep. Okay. All right. Tony and Eric are smiling, then everything's okay. And let's get on with it.
You know, this is this August was the 30th anniversary of SummerSlam 1991. You know, the match made it heaven, the match made hell.
Right.
Steamboat made his pay-per-view return to the WWF at the time as the Dragon.
Yes, in the opener.
Yeah, all of that, a dragon costume with the hood and the spikes and the fins and the blowing tie. Fire, and then he decided that just wasn't working for him. Back to WCW.
All right, let's try to get that mic back up again.
Yeah, I'm trying. I don't know what's going on with that. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. You can hear me at least for now. I'll play with it on the back end when we get down here. Yeah, the fans. It's as if the fans in Milwaukee do not care for Rick Rude. I can't understand why.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Rick Rude's mic appears to be working properly, but he's getting drowned out by the Milwaukeeans.
I don't know what's going on. I turned my speaker phone off. My speaker feature, and that's when you hear me fine.
Yeah.
And then it turns on automatically, and I don't know why.
Okay, that's got to be it then. All right, and well, the crowd's not going to let Rick Rude go through a spiel. Gee, that's too bad.
Meatheads, what are we going to get? Wisconsin cheeseheads?
Yep. Fat, out of shape Wisconsin sweat hogs, I think.
Oh, with sweat hogs now? Gosh.
Yeah. Hmm.
Oh, you can barely hear him on that.
Beanheads or cheeseheads? I don't know. Yeah, he's getting drowned out. Right. Okay, and show the ladies up. Yeah, I mean, we go to the TV tapings, and we'd be the only one, you know, only ones like catcalling Rick while he was doing this, but. I think everybody got with it here. Okay. All right. There's Mike. Mike Adkins looks awed by the sight of Rick Rude.
Rick Rude, by the way, looking kind of tan.
Oh yeah. Ladies are like, no, I wouldn't. Yeah, I don't believe them. You can't trust female wrestling fans in the front row. Okay, there we go. Look, all right.
Those women look like extras on Murphy Brown.
Yeah, that's the era for it. All right, and Ricky Steamboat and his ninja are making their way to ringside. Okay, he looks, Rick. He looks good. He's not going to be cut like Rick Rude because nobody was.
Well, and Steamboat's older too.
He's older, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean he's like a 20-year veteran at this point, right? So, more or less.
Pretty close, was he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And 77 is a rookie, but I don't think he was a rookie then.
No, I don't think I'm gonna have to look this up. But yeah, Steamboat has the experience advantage, but you know, Rude's a veteran. Let's see, here we go. Ricky Steamboat. Okay, born 51. 51, let's see, debuted in 76. Oh, okay. Yeah, 16-year veteran. That's pretty young, though. Let's see. So he is, at the time of this match, he is 39? 39, yeah, just turned 39. He's a young'un by current WWE main event standards.
That's exactly how you and I looked when we were 39.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's sounds scary. You can look at my wedding pictures with Mrs. McNeil. Yeah, that's exactly how I looked.
Yeah.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. It's a lucky woman.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So Ricky Steamboat is on his fifth marriage.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Bonnie was his third wife, apparently.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, unless somebody's playing a nasty prank in Wikipedia, I mean, which is possible. Let's see. Yeah, so they're very serious about it. Let's see. 1980. Okay. After divorcing from Bonnie in 2003, he married his fourth wife in 2004, and they divorced. Oh, wow. Jeez. Okay, so let me see. How many wives is Ric Flair on? This is kind of interesting here. If they're on the same number of wives, then that's an upset, I'd say. One, two, three. Yep. Flair's on his fifth wife. All right. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. Please.
I'm going to stop at one wife for me. That's plenty.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, I just.
I think, you know, saves on alimony and all that.
Yeah. Saves on stress.
I don't think adding more wives is a good move for me. And, you know, and of course, upsetting the current wife could get me injured. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. All right. So Steamboat's going to work the arm. Yeah. This does not seem, they are not out to set a torrid pace here.
But I mean, that's good though. I mean,
They're planning to go a while. And I think that's great.
You want to build to something too. I mean, both these guys have the conditioning. If they needed to wrestle a faster pace or
right.
I mean, they certainly could, but why do that?
I remember one night in Columbia, South Carolina when most of the roster was overseas for some reason, and it went. And the main event turns out to be Steamboat in Austin, going 36 minutes. Just yeah, and it was good. It was really good. I mean, Steamboat had been doing that sort of. I mean, that sort of thing was more common back in the late 70s, early 80s. Oh, Rick Rude's boyhood idol was the Crusher. I did not know that. It's obvious when you think about it. You know, he based his look on the Crusher.
Yeah, totally. All the dollies and going to the saloons.
Oh yeah, that would be something.
For those who don't know, the Crusher hung out in bars called saloons, and then he would call women dollies. All the pretty women in the saloons right. That he danced the polka with were dolls.
Yes, because that when you go to saloons, you meet lots of pretty women and you dance polkas with them.
Yes, lots of dollies.
Yes, in 1958, apparently. Probably maybe not even then.
Dollies sounds like a 40s term.
Well, I mean, you know what? I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. There were probably dollies in the places where Crusher hung out.
Probably.
Yeah. The ninja has his back to the ring. I guess he's preparing for outside attacks.
I got my eye on that ninja. There's something about him. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's what Jesse Ventura is saying, so.
If you go back and you watch early Mid-Atlantic with Steamboat on it, like yeah. 77, 78, Steamboat was such a good-looking guy.
I mean, oh, yeah.
He's good-looking here, but 20 years earlier, oh, my God, he was attractive. What a good-looking guy.
That's valid. And, I mean, even though his name was Richard Blood, which, by the way, perfectly great wrestling name, they wanted to play up the resemblance between him and Sam Steamboat, so... Yeah, so that's why he was Ricky Steamboat. Of course, it would mean more if I'd seen a lot of Sam Steamboat,
yeah.
or you know any of it. Yeah. All right, yeah, let's keep working the arm. Okay. Yeah, and Jim and Jesse are running down what a rough night it's been for the Dangerous Alliance.
I always thought, obviously, this work that Rick Rude did in WCW was great.
Yeah.
I think at some points in his career, he was the best heel in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best wrestlers in the world. And I always thought that he was incredibly misused in Crockett and even in the WWF.
Hmm.
I thought that the one thing that he was able to do in WCW that he couldn't do in WWF was have that air of credibility.
Yeah, and he definitely did. Bill Watts is going to come in here, and he's going to be so impressed with Rude that his plan was to get the title on Rude at Starrcade 92 and go forward, Rude was injured though and out for a while, which is why Vader gets the championship, and Vader ends up being champion for most of 93. So, you have to wonder what it would have been like if Rude had not been injured, if Rude had been able to, get a long title run in 93.
You know, it would have been great, yeah. But at the same time, he would have had the same fate as Vader.
He would have, yeah. But Vader got a lot of respect for his run. That was twice, 92 and then 94 when he suffered the career ending injury. Those cut him off before big things were gonna happen. '94 comes. When Hogan comes in '94, does he end up working with Rude? He kind of avoided it, in WWF, but that would have been an option.
Hogan didn't want to work with Rude, so I could see Rude having the belt back to Flair, and then Flair dropping it to Hogan again.
Yeah.
Or just one and done. Rude drops the belt to Hogan. Who knows? Maybe Rude would have just gone the heck with all of you and just vacated the belt and walked.
He could have. In 94, they're at a point where, WWF, they could have used Rick Rude.
Yeah.
Let bygones be bygones. Sadly, it was not to be.
Well, and Rude shouldn't have been a tag team with Manny Fernandez. He should have been a single heel and should have been the titles
and stuff. That's true. But then that's Dusty. They weren't gonna take a new guy and push him straight to the top like that.
Rude was not the best wrestler, but he was totally fine.
Right. And he was different. Was different instead of they could have used a break from the heel side, from having Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, nothing wrong with those guys, but maybe a change of pace every now and then, freshen it up.
And you saw how good Rude got here in WCW, and Crockett, he showed that he's a pretty smart guy, and if you would have thrown him into the deep end, so to speak, having had longer matches and better matches, I'll bet you would have picked it up.
Yeah.
It's probably a personality thing. Rude's a pretty strong guy, but he's a Minnesota Click guy with the Road Warriors, Hennig, Christian Khrushchev, all those guys.
Right. Well, after this show is over, spoiler alert, he's going to be, he's going to be the number one heel in the company for a while. It's happened here, because of Luger, but they immediately start moving towards Sting and Rude, which is something they're going back to after Rude came in and, after Rude came in at the end of 91 and they did that long feud with Sting the first time. And it's kind of ironic that Rude's, you know, best known for being in WWF, being the foil for Ultimate Warrior so many times, and then, you know, and then feuding with Sting, both the Blade Runners.
I had a friend who's no longer with us named Harry Simon for PWI. And
I'm familiar with him, yes.
Yeah. When he was a kid, he got to spend an afternoon with Rick Rude. Rick Rude came by, just hung out at his house. And he said Rick Rude was the nicest guy. And Rick Rude was so kind and so cool. It was the highlight of his childhood. And, you know, what you know, Rick Rude, you know, tough guy, man's man, you know, kind of gives you a different perspective on people.
I mean, you know, most of the guys he worked with in the business loved him. I mean, he had a lot of good friends.
Just not the people with power.
No.
Nice face, by the way, by Ricky Steamboat.
Oh yeah.
Nice face.
Yeah, I mean, Steamboat's facial expressions were always top notch. Okay, oh, Rude's going up. Okay. Good, Nick. There we go. All right. Jesse's saying he's working the neck, he's working the action, he's got to go for the Rude Awakening. Yeah.
Given today's technology, can you imagine what Rick Rude's tights would be like today?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, he'd be. Eesh. They'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the Ricky. I like the Ricky Steamboat Dragon tights. Yeah. I mean, I wrestlers get upset with their WWF WWE gimmicks, but they always seem to hang on to the gear once they leave.
That's funny how that works.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's like, well, I didn't like being the fire-breathing dragon, but gear is nice. Let's hang on to that.
Yeah, I thought it was smart, though. It's like the gear in the WWF for the dragon, that was a little much.
Right.
Like the hat was a little much, but I thought the tail was a little much. But I liked the wings. I thought the wings were cool. So.
Right.
I thought you got to minimalize it.
Yeah, and I mean, he trotted out the fire breathing gimmick every so often.
Yeah,
I mean, it works perfectly good. You know, works well for pro wrestling entrances or Honolulu luau's. Yep, now they're bringing it up. That's you don't get that spot. I don't remember the last time I saw that.
Yeah, no, that's a good spot.
Yeah. All right. Okay, let's see. Who gets to their feet first? All right. Oh, there you go. Got to carry him. I mean, the thing is, both these guys have good cardio. You're not gonna, you know, you're not expecting either one of them to fall off here. I mean, you'd hear all of them. You'd hear, I mean, Jim Ross or, you know, talk about how great Ric Flair's cardio is. And Ric Flair, when he talks about cardio, always talks about how great Ricky Steamboat's cardio was.
Yeah.
And Jesse out of nowhere, Jesse Ventura out of nowhere says, as you know, Milwaukee's always been known for fat women. Thanks, Jess.
That's what Jesse did.
Yep. Yeah, here we go. Wait, imagine if you know, they'd ever gotten a sleeper hold over in the past few years. Imagine the reaction for that. All right.
On the surface, it seems like it's passé, but dumber stuff that's over these days. So,
all right, no, there's nothing wrong with this.
Where you could do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but here's the thing: I don't know what you'd be expecting that would be, you know, that would be any. I don't know how this is not what you'd expect going in.
Yeah.
There you go. Nice superplex. Yep. Oh, okay. All right. I don't know what. Okay.
I don't need to do that.
Yeah. There's the backdrop. Up. And the diving clothesline. Very nice. Okay.
Some of these things I don't know if I've seen Steamboat use a lot.
Yep.
Like the enziguri and the diving clothesline like that.
Well, I think it's fine that he's, you know, I think it's fine for a big match that you bust out a, you know, couple moves you don't see every day. I know it's not WWE main event style, but it makes sense. Sure. Oh, the chop, karate chop off the top. One more time. And Jesse thinks Steamboat's wasting time. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, no. That ninja has just hit Ricky Steamboat twice with a massive cell phone.
Wait a minute. Did that fat ninja put on like 50 pounds?
Is that ninja who no longer looks like Brad Armstrong? Yeah. Wow. Go figure. It looks like Rick Rude is still your U.S. champion, though, Jim.
You know, I expected that finish, the ninja interfere, but I thought it'd be a little bit hotter of a finish. It felt like
we
weren't quite at the zenith yet for the pinfall. That felt a little early.
Yeah. The announcers have figured out that it was Pauly with the phone. Okay, well, I'm sure we'll hear about that. We don't hear anything about that afterwards. All right, so
it's WCW Saturday Night to find out.
Right.
Or call the hotline.
Oh yeah. Eric Bischoff. Very upset.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Well, and Tony's pointing out we don't know if it was Paulie dangerously. Oh, okay. It could have been another guy that with that body shape holding a giant cell phone. Apparently they didn't tape this and they didn't do this live in Milwaukee. They taped it backstage at a TV taping in Rock Hill, South Carolina, because they liked the backstage area better. Oh, in case anybody was wondering whether it was Paulie Dangerously under the mask, there you go.
Well, that's surprising. They planned something ahead for WCW.
I know it is.
Fair.
Right. Oh, look, the dot matrix printer is out for Lex Luger.
Of course it is. I like they didn't even take up the side, the guiding holes on the sides.
Yeah, it took 20 minutes to program and then like 20 more minutes to print out, but that's as much as it filled.
Had to use, God, what was it called?
I don't know I don't remember the name of the program, but
the print shop.
That sounds reasonable.
Something like that. That everybody used with all of the print art.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and Jesse talks about, bodybuilding is great, but in the end you have to wrestle. Good grief. All right. Let's see here. We've got our main event finally. They set the table for this. People have been waiting, ever since Luger turned heel, so like, I don't know, 7 months.
Oh, he stayed heel that long?
He did, yeah. Oh. Well, he did the Bash of 91, that awful show, to now, so yeah.
Well, look at that staircase. Wow,
That's the staircase.
Someone hung up some sheets.
I haven't seen a staircase like that since Arrested Development, where they were driving the stair car.
You'd have to go to like a elementary school play to see production of this.
That's right. Oh, man. Okay, so you want me to walk all the way up there so I can walk back down. That's right, Sting. Okay.
Well, just turn on these fire extinguishers.
All right.
That's some far work.
Okay. Well, good jacket though.
Yeah, Stingo is a great jacket.
Yep.
Don't worry, Sting. We spent almost $75 on your entrance.
Hey, yeah, that's right. We got the finest high school shop class money can buy.
And the home ec class made these beautiful curtains.
They got to hurry up. Now we got to hurry up and let them get done so they can work on the set for their production of Oklahoma this week. Yay. All right. Oh, geez. I mean, Luger doesn't look, for all the worries about it, Luger doesn't look any more ready for bodybuilding than he did like 2 months before.
No.
I mean, he might be a little more cut. I don't know.
What's amazing is they had to take all the stairs down after that huge entrance.
Now look, they got all the flashing different colored lights. Ooh, and they got the Lex Luger from the ceiling. Oh, my goodness.
Is that a sign?
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of wood shop, look at that.
Hmm. That's not bad. Well, let's see. I mean, Luger always billed himself as being from Chicago. So you'd think there'd be some Luger fans around.
So according to Luger, when he won the title, it was just a mess. It was so last minute. Mm-hmm. And, and then he, there were payment issues and just things were not going well in WCW in this time period, as we all know. And
I'm shocked. Yeah.
He contacted McMahon about bodybuilding and then heard back from McMahon. McMahon was like, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Luger said, you know, he didn't get paid as much money as he did wrestling, but the WBF, it's like he got to just get paid to train. Stay home and train. You don't have to travel. You don't have to take bumps. He was like, yeah.
You don't have to take bumps, yeah. I mean, come on. All right, so we're going to have the stare down. Okay, so Jim Ross's lip reading thing, Sting said, what's your problem, Luger? Which is, it sounds like Sting's dialogue. All right, so how's the kids? Oh, they're great. How are yours?
Wife still wants to divorce you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Wasn't that the issue, though, that Sting decided to become born again and confessed everything to wife?
And then Sting's wife got in touch with the other wives and said, hey, you'll never guess what, you'll never guess what Steve told me. Well, yeah, that's never going to go well.
Well, they're really talking a lot.
Yes, they are. So you think we should get started with this match? I don't know.
What idea was that?
Oh, yes. Oh, there we go. Yeah, Luger's finally gotten bored and said, no, come on. Really, that's not necessary. Well, Jim Ross just gave it away. Said, "Oh, it's like Ollie and Frazier, them talking to each other." Well, not exactly. First of all right. Okay.
Would it be Sting that's more aggressive because he's mad for all the dastardly things?
Yeah, I would. You would think so. Oh. They're not, yeah. I don't think Lex wants to do an awful lot in this match. Okay.
Funny that Jim Ross is saying Lex is like almost 300 pounds and he doesn't look that much bigger.
It matters. Well, they introduced him as 265, so I don't think he's 300 pounds.
I don't think so either.
Then again, okay, I remember King of the Ring 93. Hogan comes out, and he's obviously smaller, you know, to defend the title against Yokozuna. I mean, he's still kind of jacked, but he's obviously smaller. And, of course, they introduce him, 302 pounds, Hogan, 302 pounds. And meanwhile, you got Gorilla Monsoon, oh, boy, Hogan's really slimmed down. Well, you introduce him at the same weight you always introduce him as. You know, could you guys, like, talk to each other?
Yeah, it's like you fill out one card and they read it the rest of your career.
Exactly, you know. I mean, when I was doing the ring announcing bit, I'd get weights from them. It's like, I feel like I'm about 280 tonight. Okay, 280. Yeah. Write it down.
Look, he's as lean as he.
I mean, this is, Lex is not going to kill himself, but he's going to try to make Sting look good. What the heck was that, though? I guess Sting was trying to get him in the torture rack and Luger slipped out. Is that what I'm supposed to believe?
I'm supposed to be sure.
Okay. Oh, well,
was sloppy, but it looks like it was bland, I think.
Yeah, okay.
It looked like looking at Sting's face, I don't know, maybe. So.
Okay, so Luger, okay, Sting tried to hit the jumping DDT. He didn't catch it all, and Luger rolls out to the floor. Okay. Lex, okay, so Jim Ross is saying Lex Luger played pro football for 7 years, which is, by the way, an extremely charitable version of the truth, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Played a little bit in the USFL.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's so did Ron Simmons.
I read a great come. USFL, that was crazy. You think wrestling is crazy? I think I read a book called Football for a Buck.
It's okay, here we go. Let's see. All right. Oh, Luger. Okay, Luger was on the practice squad of the Packers for a couple seasons. 3 years Canadian football. Let's see. And then I guess they have 2 years in the USFL where he bounced around and didn't do, you know, he bounced around and didn't really do much. Yep. Okay, here we go. Oh. Made it to the reps. I mean, it's also worth noting, Luger was an offensive lineman back then, and 2021, you can't be an offense. You know, if you're 265, 275 is too small to be an offensive lineman today.
You know, both these guys can have good matches with a Flair or a Rude or a Wyndham.
Right.
Together, they just
they never really meshed and had those, you know, had those kind of matches.
Yeah, these guys, they can be led, but I don't know that either one of them are leaders.
No. No, not really. I mean, I'm trying, you know, I mean, I don't remember. I'm trying to think of sometime when Luger led a good match and, you know, I don't know, maybe against Danny Spivey, unless Spivey led the match.
I mean, this is just strikes and blows without any real story or psychology.
No, definitely not. Yeah, but yeah, I think Luger's whatever Luger's been doing training in the 60 days since before this match, it wasn't cardio training.
I don't know what it is.
I mean, the thing I remember is, you know, the Clash of Champions before the show, it was in Topeka. It was a really good show. They pretty much all the top guys from WCW were on the show except Luger. And yeah, I think the point they wanted to get out was, hey, we can do this really good show, and we don't need Luger for that. And you know, point made. Yeah, that clash is probably something we need to do. The one with Sting and Steamboat against Rude and Austin in the main event.
Yeah, that'd be great. I haven't watched that in a long time.
Yeah. All right. Oh. Doing a Sting yell. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, this isn't one of Luger's best efforts.
No, it feels like he was just kind of walking around the ring, just biding his time, and then he's like, oh, I better do something, so I'll come on, Sting. There you go. Sting yell.
All right. Ah.
And it's like for example, I think a famous example is Stan Hansen fighting Andre the Giant in Japan and really forcing Andre to work.
Right.
It's like, you know, Sting is not doing that with Luger.
I mean, Sting and Luger were friends for a while and business partners. You know, Sting's not going to force Luger to work on his way out. No. I mean, no. I mean, even if they've, you know, even if they've had they've had differences, they fought each other. Yeah. Even if they're upset with each other, yes, that's not what Sting. That's not what Sting does. Sting's never been like the enforcer of a company. Or even I don't think the locker room leader.
Still, Real Estate Steve.
Yep. Nice, really nice guy, likable guy, but, you know, has his limits in terms of what, you know. He had never really been the rah-rah guy.
But, hey, I guess that's why he's slinging.
All right. Yeah, the face paint's going, as Jesse's pointing out. There we go. All right. Yep. I think if Sting wants to get any fire out of this match, he's going to have to do it himself. And it can look sloppy as long as he looks like he's really pissed off with Luger. And I remember the WrestleMania 8, I want to say, was the next month. It was 7 or 8. It was 8. And they had Luger and his wife, and Luger and his wife were on doing an interview during WrestleMania about Luger coming to the WBF. And I guess you were supposed to know, you were obviously supposed to know who Luger was, and you were supposed to care.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, Luger looked great. I mean,
always.
Question. But I don't know if it was what he was taking. I don't know if it was genetics. I don't know what it is, but you know, he didn't have the size, the cuts, those guys in the WBF professional bodybuilder.
Well, I'm guessing he was supposed to be a heel bodybuilder or whatever. The WBF never made a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, like, okay, you've got this show called WBF Body Stars. What are they supposed to be, you know? What's the storyline of this show? Oh, there isn't one.
I think I tried to watch it once, and I was...
And they're staying with the top crossbody off the top. There you go. All right. And this is what the people wanted. I mean, most of them are there to see Sting get the title back. He just got it. We're about a little more than a year removed from him losing it in the Meadowlands to Flair. And he has it back.
You're a lackluster.
Very lackluster. Plus, you know, Luger's cut, and Kip Fry is trying to move the roster. You know, is doing steroid tests and trying to move the roster off of steroids. And you know, I mean, Sting looks less jacked than he was a couple of years ago, and less jacked than he would be, you know, a couple of years later. But I mean, he looks like a wrestler, and he looks, you know, and he probably is the, you know, best babyface choice they have at the moment to get the title off of Luger. I mean, you have Sting. I mean, Sting was on top for a while, but his title runs never seemed to be, you know, make a big difference. I mean, that would fit right in with the, you know, the current WWF model, WWE model. You know, your champion. Yeah, it's all about the brand, and who the champion is doesn't matter.
Yeah, he seems like a better challenger.
Yeah, probably. I mean, just a few nights ago, he teased, you know, did a good job of teasing Sting and CM Punk at some point, which obviously is not going to be I wouldn't expect a tremendous match out of Sting, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who'd want to see it. It's a curiosity. All right, well, Jim Ross says Sting's going to be a fighting champion, which, okay, no problem with that. Okay. Well, the fans are, he's getting a reaction. The people are happy he won the title.
Yeah, well, it's a great crowd.
Yeah.
Thank you, not for this one.
And I don't know how many of these people have heard that Luger's leaving or not. Yeah. All right.
Even if you didn't know.
Yeah.
Even Luger gave off that vibe. I mean,
right.
Guys were leaving. You can just tell.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, here's your credits. K. Allen Fry is your executive producer. Dusty Rhodes, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, Keith Mitchell, David Crockett, Craig Leathers, and of course, Rodney O'Rear. It's just not a pay-per-view without Rodney O'Rear.
What a fake name. Is that like Keith?
All right. Let's see. Jackie Crockett. Producers. And production. Okay. Everybody who's part of it. Oh, set design. Oh. Those are the people. Okay. Why would you want credit for that?
What? I think this is Margaret's third grade class.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Misty Hyatt's gowns by Marie DeGeorge. Okay, well that you'd want credit for. Yeah. Thanks to the local union who did so much. Thanks to the people who provided the trailers. All right, there we go. Turner Home Entertainment, Super Brawl 2, America. Good. Good night, everybody. All right. And that's it. That, folks, that is Super Brawl 2. That is February 29th, 1992.
Bored of wrestling podcasts, but still want a little bit of wrestling talk? Well, It's Usually Hello is the show for you. We've got music debates, we've got comedy bits, we have some wrestling talk, we've got watch-alongs, we've got actual celebrity guests. Check out It's Usually Hello, the podcast, on YouTube and on iTunes, and all your best podcast and listening devices. It is, without a doubt, the funniest show in the history of podcasting, allegedly. And that's not just my opinion, that's also the fake opinions of the fantasy people that I see 24/7. Don't forget to leave the 5-star review, because there's only so many fake accounts one person can make.
We would like to thank Gregoire Lourmet for the use of his track Run Faster, Jump Higher. You can hear all of his work at Jamendo.com or on his website musicepique.com, musicuee-epique.com.
It's over, it's done, and well, let's go into what happened next, you're asking. Well, WCW, the next night, Sunday on March 1st, WCW went to the UIC Pavilion in Chicago, and they did a show there with Dave Meltzer in attendance, drawing 2,700 people in Chicago. on that show, it's in a six-man elimination match. The Steiner brothers and Dustin Rhodes beat Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and Steve Austin. With Rick Steiner was the sole survivor, which is fine. And in a non-title cage match, the U.S. champion Rick Rude defeated WCW champion Sting. Okay. And of course, because it's Sunday, the WWF has four shows on March the 1st. Jim, the A show did a matinee in Bangor, Maine, where it was Tito Santana beating Tag Team Champion Ted DiBiase and Hulk Hogan beating WWF Champion Ric Flair by countout. That sets everybody up for the evening show in Portland, Maine, where once again it was 6,594 turned out in Portland, Maine to see Tito Santana beat Ted DiBiase. And in the main event this time, Intercontinental Champion Roddy Piper beats WWF Champion Ric Flair in a non-title cage match. So both companies doing kind of the same stuff on top. The B show, matinee in Moline, Illinois. I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Bret Hart and the Bushwhackers beat Shawn Michaels, the Mountie, and Brian Knobbs in a six-man tag. And in the main event, it's Randy Savage beating Jake Roberts in a cage match. And the same stuff that in the evening show in Des Moines, Iowa. All right, so, but the really big show of the weekend in terms of audience, Jim, it's New Japan's 20th anniversary show in Yokohama, which draws 18,000 people. That night, it is Bam Bam Bigelow and Big Van Vader winning the IWGP tag team titles from Hiroshi Hase and Keiji Muto when Vader pins Muta. And in the main event, with Masa Saito out, Kengo Kimura fills in and teams with Riki Choshu, defeating Antonio Inoki and Osamu Kido in the main event there. You still with us, Jim?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. That might be a microphone thing. All right, and the next night is Monday night, March the 2nd, where you go to Memphis in the Mid-South Coliseum. For the USWA title, Coco Beware defeats Kamala when the interference by the Moondogs backfires on Kamala. With Jeff Jarrett out, Coco Beware teams up with Jerry Lawler in the main event to fight the Moondogs. The Moondogs win, beating Lawler and Coco Beware, but Kamala comes out and makes the save and turns babyface. Yeah. That's what the people have been waiting for. Meanwhile, Global Wrestling set to have their big weekly show on Friday, March the 6th in Dallas at the Sportatorium. It's supposed to be the rematch between the Patriot and the Dark Patriot, but Del Wilkes gave his notice, kids. And I believe he'd be in Japan for a year before showing up in WCW. So, it is, the Dark Patriot defeats Terry Garvin in the main event. And, in the dark main event, it is Eddie Gilbert beating Big Bad John in a street fight. I forget who Big Bad John was, and I really don't care. So there you are. We've made it through there. And let's see. I don't know what we should get to first, but you know, if you're following us online, you know that Jim has been going through dialysis, and you know, it's part of his life, and probably I don't know how long it's going to be that way. Maybe you can fill everybody in, Jim.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have a definitive answer on that yet. I don't know, because I don't know if I'm a candidate for a kidney replacement yet, because the kidney surgeons want my autoimmune disease to be in remission for a year before they decide if they want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So till then, I'm switching from dialysis kidney center to a peritoneal dialysis at home. So I'm going to have less time at home in the evening to be able to do these shows.
And at the same time, next month, my beautiful wife starts nursing school. And I have two small children, which means I will be spending more of my evenings taking care of the children. You know, as you know, Adrian's going to have classes and she's going to be studying, and that's going to greatly impact when I will be able to record as well. So we are going to, you know, things are kind of in flux right now. You know, for the next few weeks, it will hopefully not be a problem. But we're just giving everybody a warning. The time is going to come where we might not be doing this together. And then that's, I mean, hopefully temporary. We might have a replacement host for a while until Jim is ready. But I mean, I can tell you this honestly. If we're going to not be doing the show together, I'd rather it be for this reason, you know, because so that Jim can get better and my wife can get through nursing school, than the reasons we weren't doing the show together a year ago, which were a lot scarier, to be honest.
Yeah.
If we can't get this worked out, I'm just telling you, there's a strong probability that we're going to be that we're only going to have a handful more shows together, and then we'll just get together when we can, and somebody else might have to sit in here, and it would change the nature. It'll change the nature of the show having doing it with someone else. Given the choice, I would rather do it with Jim, but we've had other hosts through here and it hasn't killed us. So we'll see how it goes. All right. And having gone through that labored and torturous explanation, let's move on to something happier as we start season 8. It's time for a vote, Jim.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So let's see. I think technically was my choice last time, but let's start with the fans' choice. We have all the fan selections here to choose from, and I think it's starting September. I think we're gonna go with Fall Brawl '97. From September '97, WCW again. This time at the Lawrence Joel Coliseum in Winston-Salem. And, it's a War Games, the two main shows in September, right, either are all out, and, right now they're all out for AEW, and WWE is doing Extreme Rules, and, if you want Extreme, there's a War Games here. It's the Horsemen versus the NWO in War Games for the second straight year in 97. And the other main event, the other big featured match is, it's Lex Luger and Diamond Dallas Page teaming up against Randy Savage and Scott Hall in a tag match. So, it's Ric Flair leading the Horsemen against Kevin Nash's NWO team. So, it's a big show, yes, but Hogan's not on it. The big angle is Hogan and Piper in a cage at Halloween Havoc, and it's going to sort of prepare it for that. So. But obviously a suitable show for the fall. You like War Games, you like WCW, that's going to be a pick for you. All right, so Jim, would you like to go next?
Yeah, go ahead, go on.
All right, so I'm thinking about what shows we want to do, and we got done with SummerSlam 2022, which is a big show and a big stadium. I mean, what would you estimate that crowd was, Jim? I was told like 40,000.
Yeah, 41, I think. The Dave Meltzer reported.
Okay, that's fine, and that's fine, and I think that's great. However, summer of 2002, WWE hit Australia for the first time in 16 years. They went to the stadium in Melbourne. And they drew 54,000 for their WWE Global Warning show. It wasn't a pay-per-view. It was put on a DVD later. It was supposed to be a SmackDown brand show. People got the card got changed around. They ended up going with the main event was The Rock defending the WWE title against Triple H and Brock Lesnar in a three-way. And also on the, the number two match was Torrie Wilson and Stacy Keibler in a bra and panties match. I I guess if you look at it the other way, the number two match was probably Edge versus Chris Jericho. But, you know, a lot of, it's the 2 hour version that was on the DVD is up on Peacock. And, it's a good show. It's in front of a big crowd. They cut a few matches from the WWE, from the version that wound up on the DVD and on Peacock. But it's not like, you know, it's not like fans in 2021 want to see a Kurt Angle match or a Randy Orton match or you know, Chavo Guerrero or Billy Gunn or Dave Bautista or any of those guys, right?
Right, who does?
Yeah, so it'll be just fine, I'm sure. But that's it, folks. That's what you get. You get all the pageantry that was WWE Global Warning 2002. And it's a really good main event. I'm gonna say that for it. It's the sort of thing that WWE does well, and did well in 2002 anyway. All right, so Jim, you got any ideas?
Sure, why not? Let's do. You know, you got me thinking about Victor Fall Brawl, and you know, Fall Brawl originally was a Clash of Champions. So I was thinking
right.
Clash of Champions. So why not we do the 30th anniversary of Clash of Champions 16, I think. November 19th, 1991.
November
1991? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Let me see. Oh, that was, I'm trying to remember. I don't even remember what that was.
That could be Luger and Rick Steiner?
That sounds right, yeah. Okay, Luger and Rick Steiner. Yeah, okay. We can do that. We're all about that. All right. So Clash 16. I'll put that down on here. We got that. We got Global Warning.
And Sting, Pillman, and Johnny B. Bad. You got some okay stuff on the show.
All right. Let's go with that. Let's go with the Clash of Champions 16. All right. So I'm going. Oh, and it's time to give the wheel a mighty spin. Oh, hold on. Crap. Yeah, we've got, oh my God, we got so much crap on the wheel. And now Peacock has almost all the stuff that we need on here.
I mean, yeah.
And really, they're later this month, and in the month of September, they're supposedly going to bring out some more eight more episodes of Superstars. There's a question as whether they're just going to continue the 94 Superstars that they're doing, or whether they're going to go back and pick it up from 86. And I have no idea, obviously, but either way, it's going to be fun. So I don't think the network is going to be the joyful thing that we all anticipated it was going to be. But pretty much everything except the hidden gems are in, so I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But right now, yeah. But let's give.
It was, but it's okay.
Yeah, it's not what it was, but it's okay. So we're going to give the wheel a final spin here. I've got thousands of entries on the wheel. Let's take a listen here. We got, we got World Class. We got Raw. We have TNA Asylum, Saturday Night's Main Event, All-Star Wrestling, and we stop at? Oh, we're going to, oh, well, let's hit play. We're going to stop at something special here. Okay. That's right, Jim. It's WWF SmackDown. And not just any episode of SmackDown. We have WWF SmackDown from March 16th, 2000. WWF SmackDown was taking place. It was recorded March 14th at the Nassau Coliseum in Long Island. And on that show, it was the WWF champion Triple H in a non-title match with Hall of Famer The Godfather. And the big feature, The Rock, the People's Champion, the number one contender, taking on Sean Waltman, X-Pac. So that's a pretty big 2 hour show there.
That's got to be good.
Yeah. SmackDown from 2000. The build to WrestleMania 2000 was great, in my opinion. It led to the show being a disappointment by comparison. But yeah, why not? Okay, so there we go. We got your Clash of Champions 16. We got your Global Warning 2002 from WWF, and we got your SmackDown of 2000. All right. And all these possibilities up on the vote. I'm on Twitter at RealPatMcNeil. Jim is at Jim Valley. And the voting will be up for a couple days by the time you hear this, and we'll wrap it later this week. And obviously leave your vote. Then don't forget, leave a 5, 6, or 7 star review for us on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc. We love that. And if you'd like to know more about Sting, Lex Luger, Ricky Steamboat, Rick Rude, or for that matter, Paulie Dangerously, visit pwtorch.com, f4wonline.com, or The Wrestling Observer, or go download your local library app, because they're all in books. Jim!
Well, be sure to vote early and vote often, and we'll find out what it is. I stole this line from another channel, but same Pat time, same Pat channel.
Oh, my. All right. Well, I mean, I expect that Jim will I expect that somehow we'll be together next week. It's after that worries me. But until then, yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, and next week is another episode. Good night, everybody.